My name is Buzz Grin, and I am a drunk. According to this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm supposed to introduce myself as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been coming here since September 13th, 1974. Somebody gave me hell last week, said I didn't tell them how long I was sober, but I'm supposed to talk on step five tonight, and I alluded to that a little bit last week, and I decided to take my fifth. I went to a Catholic priest who was walking down the steps out of the church in Conneaut, and I grabbed him and told him what I wanted to do, and he was agreeable, and we went inside, and I know today I got in the Catholic confessional, and I took a Catholic confession before the priest. And that was my first fifth step. But it was all right. It doesn't say in this book any special way we got to do it. All right, that worked for me at the time. Worked for my sponsor at the time. I made an attempt. All right, and I had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps that we're talking about. I didn't just all of a sudden wake up in bed like Bill Wilson did and have one of them hot flashes. You know, it was a thing that took time with me. It took a lot of time, and it came slowly over by coming to meetings and by listening to other people talk about those steps and how they applied them to their life and what happened in their life after they applied those steps. That's how I got my spiritual awakening. Slowly. They call it the educational variety. My wife says I'm still not educated, so I don't know. But I keep coming to these classes and I keep learning. And I don't know how many times I've taken a fifth step. We used to go to a retreat up in Derby, New York. I know it's still going on, but when I started going up there when I first sobered up, it was always on Mother's Day weekend. And my wife's got a lot of turquoise jewelry because on the way home, there's an Indian trading post right there on the river. And we used to stop there, get our wife something for Mother's Day. We just spent the weekend at a retreat, right? And so she has some nice turquoise jewelry from that. But there was a little Catholic priest. He was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And every year I would go upstairs with him and we would do my fifth step. I don't remember a whole lot about those fifth steps. There's a whole lot about my early sobriety I don't remember. But I don't remember getting into detail like I do now. All right? It was a pretty easy-going thing. He chewed Copenhagen like I did, and he smoked a pipe, and he chewed tobacco. So we'd sit up there and talk about different brands of tobacco and how good it was. And then we'd go downstairs, and he'd tell the guys, "Now, you can't smoke in a chapel." And they'd get all mad at me because I could chew tobacco, and the priest didn't care about that. But so how far I took that fifth step in those early days, I don't know. But I took a fifth step almost every year. And after I quit going that retreat, it became like a yearly thing with one of my sponsors, all right? Whoever I had. I've gone through six sponsors. They keep dying on me. And that's why Todd's younger than I am, so I got a good chance of going before he does, right? But I've done that fifth step a lot of times. And you know something? I never had an earth-shattering hot flash or anything by taking that fifth step. I believe it's a very important part of my life. But after I was sober about 10 years, I went to a Joe and Charlie. Well, first I got a set of tapes by Joe and Charlie, and then I went to one of their seminars over in Ohio, and I spent the weekend with them, and consequently, through the years, I spent a lot of time with them guys. And the fifth step took on a whole new meaning. And I'm going to tell you one thing. When you start sponsoring people, and you take a new person through his fifth step, I'll guarantee it'll take on a whole new meaning to you. It did me. And anybody I've ever talked to, once you take your new guy through a fifth step, your fifth step means a whole lot more. It's a whole new experience for me. But the fifth step is to prepare us to live the rest of those 12 steps that we talk about. All right? When you take that fourth step, now you've written down, at least I did, I wrote down, I don't know about you, but I know about me. All right? I shouldn't say we, I should say me. I wrote down my grosser handicaps. And the original list was pretty gross. They were all handicaps. But as the years go by, I find, more and more things. To me, living this program of Alcoholics Anonymous is applying those steps to your life on a daily basis. And there's a lot of times during the day, I will do something and I'll take my own fifth step right then and there and say, that's something I should have handled better, I should have done it different, I should have been wiser when I said that. And so it's really a fifth step, and it keeps occurring in my life. But the first time I took on with Joe and Charlie, they really got down to picking hairs, they got pretty tough, and I did that, and I really felt better afterwards, but it wasn't the answer. And I had to keep doing it, and I have to keep doing it every so often. I don't believe the fifth step is a one and done thing. I think it's a part of a way of life. This is the way I take my inventory every night. What I did today, well, not every night. Some nights, I get pretty tired and I don't bother. I just go to sleep. I try to take my inventory on a regular basis. And as I take my inventory, I try not to take my wife's inventory. I try not to take my kids' inventory or the guys I'm sponsoring or any of the rest of you, especially Kevin's. I try not to take his. It's one of my character defects. I'd a lot rather to have you take your inventory. All right? If I take your inventory, it's a lot easier for me. All right? I don't like to take my inventory. Because when I took my inventory and then we sit down and talked about it, I found out all those things that I was at, what I brought into the situation, why I did those things, whether it was fear or whatever it was, jealousy, self-worth, whatever the problem was, I found out at the base of it was fear. And when I came here, I'd have told you, I'm not afraid of nothing. And I really meant that. I defied the law. I defied the law of nature many, many times. I did a lot of things that I should have just died from. Right? And when it come to God or one of them religious kind of things, I'd get up on the bar and throw my hands in there and say, okay, God, if there's a God, strike me dead right now. And I'm still here. Right? So I proved to me at that time there was no God. I wasn't afraid to die. Never have been. But all these things I thought I wasn't afraid. And it turns out, when I sit down with Joe and Charlie, and we went over that list, and we got to that last line, that last column, I was afraid of every damn thing there was going. I was afraid you didn't like me. I was afraid I wasn't good looking enough. I was afraid I wasn't smart enough. I was afraid I didn't work enough. I was afraid of everything. I was afraid of everything. That's why I acted the way I did 90% of the time, was because I didn't want you to know that I was afraid. So most of that stuff was a cover-up for me, to cover up my fear and my insecurity. I would pretend that nothing bothered me. And I went through life like that. I went through that for a long time. And when I took those steps and wrote down my inventory, and then I had to sit down talk to somebody about it. About Father Atkins, that wasn't too big a deal. He was a pretty jovial little guy, and, you know, he looked like that little bald kung fu guy on television, and we got along great, and I'm not Catholic, but we got along good, and it was just kind of a fun thing once a year to do, you know. But we got some of the things, you know, he would tell me, you're not supposed to swear like that. You know, if you're going to look at the girls the way you look at them and think the way you're thinking, you might as well be doing what you're thinking. And so quit thinking, and then you won't be doing. And all those kind of things he put me on the right path for. But there was a lot of other things that were deeper, that cover-ups I did, the pretenses I had. And it was only by talking with more than one alcoholic at different times that these things would come up. I don't think I ever could have handled a whole fifth step that I've taken in my lifetime one time. You know, I have been running off in the weeds someplace. But I just take a little bites and little bites and little bites. And somebody asked me earlier if there's a sheet for the fifth step. And there are sheets for the fifth step. There's a lot of sheets. I've done a lot of Joe and Charlie seminars. I did them at the prison out there, and I've got a stack of them, sheets at home that I mimeographed off every time for when we do one of them classes. But I go back, I found it much easier and much better. The last thing that Dr. Bob said to Bill Wilson was, don't louse this thing up, keep it simple. In this book is everything we need to know about that fourth and fifth step inventory. All right, and if we read this, to me, that's what we need to do, and we need to do that on a more regular basis. I don't know about you, but I know about me. And if you give me a sheet of psychological answers, I don't understand psychological things very much anyhow. Just a word scares me. But if you give me a list of things psychologically that I should be doing or not doing, I get confused. And when I get confused, the hell with it, I'll do it tomorrow. You know, I'll do it later. And so this book makes it so simple and so easy. I don't know why we want to get it any more confusing. And it worked. It was worked all these years, this book. The Fifth Step Program, in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter, is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. You know, I had a lot of defects I never wanted to tell anybody. I didn't want to mention, you know, I go to my grave and I'll never tell anybody that. Well, I heard in this program we're as sick as our secrets. And I had a lot of secrets I never wanted to tell anybody. And there were some of them I was sure that the statute of limitations wasn't off on yet, so I didn't want to tell anybody about those. And, you know, I just was in fear for a long time. I never got rid of the real root of the problem. And when I got rid of the root of the problem, my life became easier. I didn't have to pretend anymore. I knew exactly where I was going. One day at a time, all right? Most of my fifth step was taken on resentments. That's what it tells us in this book. Resentments I had from childhood on, and get rid of them people that you're mad at, and we make amends to them, and by making amends, we get on with it, all right? On page 75, it says, carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we admitted anything. So when we get done with that fifth step, you should go over the first five steps. All right? Is there any of those first five steps that you believe you didn't do? I have to. A lot of times, you know, even today, if I sit down and seriously thinking about my fifth step, what caused me to think that I needed a fifth step. I did something wrong. All right, or I thought I might have done something wrong. So I take a fifth step on myself right then and there. But then as I look, I forgot I was an alcoholic. All right. I acted like I would act if I was not an alcoholic. Or I forgot to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me sanity. I was trying to run the show again, play God. One of those first four steps is probably going to come in to show itself up if I'm really honestly taking a fifth step. And so when I get done with that fifth step, and now I got, you know, getting into action. That's the name of this chapter. Chapter 6 is getting into action. And when I first started leading, an old timer says, what he did was this, when before he left home, he would open up the big book and just open it up and start reading, no matter where it was. And so I would do that. Before I led, I'd open up the big book, I'd start reading, just to kind of get your head in the right direction, not to quote what you read or try and remember what you read, just get in the right place. And so I was going to lead one night, and I thought, you know, I talk about getting into action all the time. I talk about being a general service representative and about sponsoring people and about making coffee and setting up the rooms and all those things. And that, to me, was that's what I knew about getting into action. So I opened up the book the night before I led, and it was chapter 6, and it says, getting into action. And I thought, holy cow, God works in mysterious ways. It didn't say anything in this chapter about making coffee. Doesn't say anything about sponsoring people. Starts out with the fifth step. All right, and there's three or four pages here, all on the fifth step. All right, and after we go through that fifth step, and after I got that down, my sponsor set me down, and we did the third step prayer. Do the third step prayer, and I do that today. Some of the guys here are sponsoring, and they'll tell you when you do your fifth step with me, before you do it, we do the third step prayer again. Do it twice. And that's what gets my mind in the right place, what I'm really asking God to do for me, is turn my life around. And that's what the fifth step to me is about. So finally, I'm going to take some action on what I've been doing in the first four steps. First three steps are pretty easy. I didn't have to write nothing down. Alright? Just mentally know what it said and start applying those principles to my life. But the fourth step, I wrote that stuff down. Now, I gotta take the action of telling somebody else. And that's the start. The fifth step was the start of me working that program of getting into action from then on. Alright, the rest of the steps are all action. There ain't no more thinking about it. You got to start doing it. All right? And that's what I did. I think that's about it, you know. Carefully after reading the first five proposals, we asked if we admitted anything. Is we're building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last? Is our work solid so far? You know, we think we've done it right and we're doing it okay, then it's okay. And you can always do it over again, all right? But you flip that page over, and now we're on page 76, and page 76 is step 6 and 7. We just spent 5 pages, we went 4 chapters to get to step 5. Step 5 was 4 or 5 pages. And now in two, we're going to do step 6 and 7. So I'll stop there and let you ask questions if you got any questions.
Thank you. Thank you so very much, Buzz. This will be our question and answer portion. I'm asked to remind you that questions should relate to the topic. And I'm getting there. And that comments are welcome in the form of questions. If you can figure out what that means. So do I have any takers?
Jim Alcoholic. Thanks, Buzz. The exact nature of our wrongs, is that kind of like the secrets that keep us sick? If at step five, there's something we leave out, those are kind of the secrets, right, that keep us sick.
Well, the exact nature of our wrongs is what I'm looking at, is what caused me to do those secrets that I'm hiding. See, usually those secrets that I'm hiding are not a feeling I have. It's an action I took someplace. Something I did to somebody else, or it could be just a talk that I had with somebody, something I said to somebody else. But it's an action. And the exact nature is my wrong is what made me think, talk, act, or do that inside. And it boiled down with me, almost every one of them was fear. When I got that fifth column over there and I got in that fifth column, it was fear that caused me to do that. It wasn't that I was afraid of her husband, or I was afraid of something like that. It was that I was afraid you wouldn't like me. I was afraid I wasn't good enough. I was afraid I wasn't smart enough. Those were the things that, you know, the exact nature as I look at them are my wrongs. That's what caused me to do those things, those secrets that I didn't want to tell about. All right? Those little penny ante robberies and things like that, and I thought I got away with her. You know, times I got speeding tickets and I got away with them or things like that. It's what made me do. Why did I get them? It's because I thought I was above the law, because I thought I was different, I was better. Those are the things I got to get out of my head. That answer for you?
Thanks, Buzz. Thanks, Jim. Buzz, thanks for coming here 5 weeks in a row. It's quite a commitment. So when you're taking that four-step inventory, in the book, it shows people you've got resentments about. But there are other things that alcoholics, this alcoholic, in fact, may have resentments about. Things, institutions. Do you include that when you're working with someone in their inventory?
Anything that you have a resentment toward, whether it's a federal government. I had a deep resentment for the IRS. All right? and I had a lot of resentments against institutions. And how are you going to nail an institution? Credit card companies, I hated them. I always used their cards, but when I... Well, you know, when they wouldn't garner them anymore and they wanted me to pay what I owed them, then I had resentment, see. So I had to look at why I had that resentment. And it isn't the institution, really, I had the resentment was. The resentment come from something I was thinking or feeling or doing, you know. They were picking on me again.
Now, after you've made this list, do you hold on to the list?
Yes.
And you do, okay. Thanks, Jerome.
Thanks, Buzz, for your talk. I'm Jeff. I'm an alcoholic. One of the things that I've struggled with some guys, the only way I know how to do my fifth is how they talk about it in the big book, in the columns, and, you know, one to five, and that's kind of how I do it. I've run into a few guys, or I've talked to other guys that do fifth steps that are different, and I struggle with, this is what the big book says, so isn't that how we're supposed to do it? Have you ever done a fifth step or the fourth and fifth with someone where you're not doing the columns? I don't know. I don't know if that works or not. It's just the only way I know how to do it. It seems to make sense for me.
I've looked at some of them other ways. I've read a lot of the literature put out on other ways. To me, the successful people I've met in Alcoholics Anonymous have stayed sober as long as I have or longer. They're the people that do it according to the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It tells us in the Big Book that we're not the only way. And so I believe that. You know, I've gone to churches and I've seen guys get up to the altar and they were just as bad a drunk as I was, and they swear off drinking and never drink again. That works for, I tried that, all right? I was standing at the altar and they had this guy from South America come in and they said he could cure anything. And he come by and he laid his hand on me. And when he laid his hand on people, they were flipping over backwards and going out, you know. He laid his hand on me and I just stood there. And then when he came back up the line again, he laid his hand on me a little harder that time, and I'm just standing there. My wife says they had four or five guys laying hands on me by the end, but I'm an alkie. Go ahead, sucker, hit me in the head. I ain't going no place, right? It didn't work for me. I know it worked for other people. I've seen it work. Right? It didn't work for me. I'm different. But I'm not different when it comes to alcohol. Alcoholism and me are the same, but this book, that's why I try to stick to this book when I do the four-step. It worked. It's worked for how many years now? 70-some years? And why change it? That answer your question? And if they want to do it another way, that's fine. If it works for them, that's fine too. You know, I have no argument with somebody doing it another way. It's just the way I like it. Just like when I went to prison for a lot of years, I was going into prison with a message, and I'd tell those guys, you got to find a higher power. And they said, well, I don't go to church. I said, that's good. I don't go to church either. But you got to find a higher power. I don't care whether you're Muslim, Methodist, or what you are. You've got to be something. You got to find some kind of higher power. And I don't care what it is. It don't matter. Nothing in this book tells me what kind it's got to be. I need to have a power greater than myself that will restore me to sanity. And the way he's going to restore me to sanity is applying these steps to my life. That's my restoration process to sanity again.
Thanks, Buzz. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Buzz. Diane here. I found people have said that doing the fifth step multiple times is like peeling an onion, where you peel layers of your problems away. Have you found in all your fifth steps that as the layers peeled away, you found something you thought that you had laid to rest years ago was still underlying there and still had to deal with it?
Right.
And, you know, how... I had that not too long ago where I did a 12-step program with a bunch of women. Every week we did a different step together as a group. And several of the women I sponsor was in that group. So I'm doing fourth and fifth with them and doing my fourth and fifth. And I found that, you know, as I did that, an old item that I thought I had dealt with years ago cropped back up again. And it was shocking to me that I thought, you know, I had done the fourth and fifth, and I thought I had resolved it, and it came back up again. I just wondered if you had experienced those things, too.
Yeah, I experienced that, Diane. I experienced that a lot, all right? A lot more than I should, probably. It seems to me that the longer I live, and if I get away from AA for a while, last summer I had a problem with medication and resentments all piling up at the same time. Even though I was going to meetings and doing everything I was supposed to do, I started to revert back. And you know, those old habits we got, those old thinking habits, poor me, poor me, pour me another drink, will get us. You know, in a big book, a guy that the car salesman had stopped for lunch, and he decided that a shot in a glass of milk would be okay. You know, and suddenly, you see. And those things will come back on me. I don't know about you, but to me, they will come back. That's why I got to continue to take that fifth step, that fourth and fifth step, where I can continue to work all the steps. It's not a one-time-and-you're-done proposition, as far as I'm concerned, you know. I've watched guys that thought the fourth was a one-time proposition, And I've seen them down, when they get to 10, 11, and 12, don't know what they're supposed to do. They get hung up on things, and now they're mad at the whole world. They forgot why they're mad. They're mad because they have a character defect or a resentment or something that they haven't taken care of in the past. That answer your question?
Thanks, Buzz. Diane?
Hi, Buzz. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic, and thank you for this this seminar that you're giving, or whatever, this session. You know, kind of going along with what Jeff said earlier about how different people may perceive how to do the fifth step, and you're working with them as a sponsor, I had the experience where I presented the way it was presented to me, and so I was expecting to get back what, like, the format or something similar to what I had been shown. And it came to my realization that the sponsee I was working with was really incapable of actually figuring that out. And so I determined that, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I had to just say to myself, well, this person's doing the best they can with the fifth step, and what my expectation is and how the book kind of structures it is very nice, but some people have a different, and I honestly think in this case it was maybe some damage done from the drinking. But have you had that experience, and would you say to yourself, you know, this is the best this person can do, and they're willing, so even though it's not really coming across, or it's not, you're not really doing exactly the way the big book says.
I think they're right on track. You're right on track to let them do that. My first, fourth, and fifth, if you remember, was real quick in a couple of days. And no real understanding of what a fourth and fifth was, but I did it, and that worked. All right. If we do it, we've done it. Now, we're going to continue to do it. And I tell people, it's like going to school. When I was in first grade, they taught me one and one is two. And I don't know where second grade or third grade, I learned two and two is four. All right. And then as I go through school, I learn these different math problems until by the time I got in ninth grade, they let me take Algebra 1 in ninth grade, 10th grade, and 11th grade. But it's a continuing process, see? It's a continuing process, and I believe that was... we're not going to do anything perfect. That's why I mentioned practice a lot. You know, you've heard me lead a few times, and I believe in practice. If we practice doing the steps at all, any step, if we're practicing doing it, we're going to get better at it. And the more we practice, the better we get. That old German saying, the Americans say practice makes perfect, and none of us are ever going to be perfect. But the German translation of that is repetition makes a master. You know, and I was tickled this morning. I was watching the news, and the oil guy that's going for being questioned now, he said something about repetition. He says repetition. I said, right on. I like that guy. Yeah, because repetition is how we learn. I don't care what it is. And so if you don't do the first step, the fourth step, the tenth step right the first time, what's right? See, it's just that you make an attempt at it. All right. The only thing that I have to do 100%, the only step I really have to worry about 100% is that first step. And as long as I can do that first step 100%, the other 12 will fall into place as they're needed. Thanks. Did that answer your question?
Thanks, Buzz. Bridget? Louie, knew I could depend on you.
Thank you, Dave. Hi, Buzz. Lou, hi. I'm an alcoholic. This has been a really uplifting meeting for me. You know, as I've stated before in the other meetings, I'm kind of right there at the point where I'm in the fourth and fifth step myself. A lot of years of sobriety, well, a lot of years dry, you know, and, you know, practicing the principles of really, you know, in my opinion, almost less than a year. So it's been uplifting to hear, you know, some of the things other people have been saying. They almost negated my questions for you because everybody's had some real good questions. So what I'm kind of getting at here is, like, I'm really getting ready to move forward and take those steps, and been writing some stuff down, and I started to think about the fifth step and how I was going to approach some of the people that I feel I really need to make amends to. And it's going to be easy to make amends to some of these people that are directly involved in my life. There's a few of them that it would really take some serious effort to even track down where they are. You know, and I was, you know, following the big book to the T and stuff like that. It isn't that I would bring anyone harm by reaching out and making an apology and making amends to some of these people. It would be just the act of finding them, because I told you before, this goes back, you know, I'm 46 and I've been pretty much partying my entire life and causing problems my entire life. So I wouldn't be able to find some of these people. And what I've gotten from this meeting tonight, that it would be okay, in your opinion, like you've done in with you know, your recovery, is to basically see a clergy. And these ones, these amends that I feel I'd need to make to get out of my soul and to get moving on with my life and to feel better, I could basically tell that to another human being, such as a clergy, and possibly make an amends that way, like you said, like in a confessionals type setup, so that I projected to someone else and to God that I was willing and wanted to make amends to these people, although finding them would be very hard to do.
Okay, first things first. Before you can make amends, you got to find out why you're going to make amends. What amends you have to make. So that means you have to take the fourth step, and you said you're thinking about taking a fourth step.
Right.
So you don't know what amends you're going to make.
Right. Well, you know, I'm compiling a list, which I've been compiling a list.
Let's do it this way.
Okay.
Think about taking that book out of my hand. Oh, you took it. Think about it.
Okay.
The book doesn't move, does it?
No.
So you got to take it, and that's the way with the men, you have to take that first step.
Right.
And then you have to take the fifth step, because you don't know what amends you're going to make.
Yeah, and I think that's... Part of my problem right from the get-go is that I didn't keep it simple, and I had gotten myself involved in probably no less than 3 different, you know, step meetings. Some of them are interpreted a little different than others, and I've got worksheets piling up and, you know, little scratch papers and notes and this and that, and I think what is boiling down to is basically procrastination on trying to do this first step perfectly so that I can move on with my life through the rainbows and the colors, when what you're saying is just get the damn that step done, and because you're going to go back and constantly...
Just what Bridget said, if they don't do it right, so what? Do it.
Right.
Alright? You can always correct it later if it's wrong, but I doubt if it'll be wrong. It's just probably not inclusive enough. But I did that my whole drinking life. I wanted to be a nice guy. I wanted to not get drunk all the time. I wanted to go home for supper every night. See, but I sit at that bar and take another drink, and then, you know, I would go in there in the morning and so hungover and so sick and get that first drink and say, oh God, I'm going to quit drinking. I'm never going to drink again. But I've already had a drink today to get well, because if I don't drink today, I'm going to die. So tomorrow I'm going to quit drinking. And that's the same thing you're doing with your fourth and your fifth, and you're putting it off to tomorrow. It's called procrastination, I think.
Yeah.
So quit procrastinating. Just do it. Don't worry about how well you do it or how good you do it. Just do it. And see, that's the thing that saved my life. If I would have waited and done it the way even the big book says... I did it in a hurry because I was cocky enough and arrogant enough, I thought I had something to say when I led. And so I wanted to hurry up and tell these people how wonderful I was that I quit drinking. But my sponsor said, you have to take your fourth and fifth first. So I did one in a real hurry, and not at all the way I probably should have done it, but it worked for me.
Right, that in the end.
It's the way my first sponsor was, you know, probably the worst sponsor in the world. It was exactly what I needed. We would go to a meeting, and Ed would, on the way home, maybe the subject was Easy Does It, and we would argue so bad on the way home over Easy Does It that when we got to my driveway or his, we'd be out in the lawn beating the crap out of each other, trying to prove what Easy Does It really meant. That's what I had to go through to get here. Hope you don't have to go through that.
Thank you, Buzz.
Thanks, Louie. Thanks, Buzz. Thanks so very much, Buzz.
Thank you, David.